to commit so that we can do it properly in the way it's supposed to be done by our spiritual leaders, how they told us it should be. And so we were really fortunate to know that Secretary De Paulin came, because it just shows that, you know, as Native American people, we still have an extension to one another, to where we still want to, if one's up here, we all want to be up here. And as a Native American, we know that when one of us rises, we all rise. And so it's really a good feeling to know that someone in her position is listening to what we're doing, you know, is paying attention to how we're moving forward with the Reparation Act. And hopefully, as we move forward, there'll be other ceremonies with other tribes that move forward with their, you know, bringing home their children.
And we will certainly follow them. And I want to thank you, Christopher Eagle Bear, for joining us, a member of the Shichangu Youth Council, speaking to us from South Dakota. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Noreen Sheikh, Mary Tarasena, Tommy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriana Contreras, our general manager, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO board guides our strategic work and represents the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kboo.fm and fill out an application. If you need a paper copy mailed to you, call the station or email applicationboard@kboo.org. That's one word, applicationboard@kboo.org. The deadline to apply is July 25th, 2021.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Monday. It's time for more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Stay tuned.
Good morning, and you are listening to more talk radio on this, the 19th day of July in the year 2021. I am Cecil Prescott, and I'm joined by my co-hosts.
Celeste Carey, good morning, good morning. Hey, boo. Can I get that to focus? No, it won't. Okay. Anyway, yes, you are listening to your community connection, KBOO 90.7 FM here in the city, 91.9 in White Salmon, Washington, River, Oregon, and 104.3 in Paloma, Oregon. Everywhere else, it's on KBOO.fm. Good morning. How are you doing this morning, Cecil?
I am well. It's was a beautiful morning, and see the sunrise, and it's just seems like summer. So I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
And all right. We can call this summer the summer of caution, though, for sure, as some people are calling it summer of caution. Summer of COVID, I want to call it the summer of let's count the days that things are not going wrong and be happy.
Yes.
And I know it's a long title, y'all.
Well, there's a lot that's going on that, you know, should be of concern to many, many people, whether it's wildfires in Oregon, flooding in Europe, crises of immigrants and refugees all over the world, the results of the climate crisis in all parts of the earth, political instability, lots going on.
But nevertheless, we're on and we're inviting you to be part of our conversation here on More Talk Radio. So, you know, we talked about some of the challenges we face. And of course, if you're going to talk about challenges, you're going to talk about how we can help each other, you know, how we're supposed to help each other pull through these situations. Help has taken many forms. There's been, mandated help, like if you get drafted into some kind of service. And, of course, there's volunteer help, you know, which means that you are doing it from some large sense of giving, some altruistic bent in your personality or because your society or your culture or your group has said, or your mom or dad has said, get up, go do something, you know. We noticed, however, in the past few years, there's been a decided drop in what people call volunteerism. Not because people care less, or is it? Not because people are working more, or is it? Not because these things are not important, because the people still do volunteer, just in different fashions. And some time ago, there was an author who wrote a book. The book was entitled Bowling Alone. And even though the book is older, and there's actually some people it references now that are probably younger than the book, it talked a lot about how our volunteering in longitudinal or long-term commitment has decreased. The book Bowling Alone is by Robert Putnam, and I remember having to read it in one of my engagement classes with at PSU. I think it was maybe about 2007 or 8, maybe thereabouts, I took the class, and the book was published in 2000. And I thought, okay, let's talk about how that's affecting people right now. And so one of the things we find is that millennials don't have a lot of time to volunteer. They're not of the same social situation that occurred when a lot of boomers were younger, or as their parents, you know, Generation Z. They were Gen X. There we go. Make sure I get my generations right. And so situations have changed. Many millennials have to work more than one job, and in doing so, that eats up a lot of their time. And they don't have as much disposable time, I guess volunteer time, however you want to say it, as the other generations have had. And so I'm wondering if today we might get some of our younger listeners or listeners who have younger friends to tell them to call in and share what it's like for them to be engaged. 'Cause during this year, I remember when you used to see all of these advertisements, especially on television, encouraging you to volunteer in something. Everything from way back in the day when we had the Peace Corps to various other volunteer corps, you know, maybe it might have been a very specific organization like Meals on Wheels or what have you. But volunteerism seems to be down, and the ability to engage for younger people who feel so passionately about so many things seems to be down. And we wanted to hear a little bit about that today. But that's not the only topic. I'll let you unfold the other one so I don't suck the air out, people.
Well, I also want to let our listeners know the phone number here. It's 503-231-8187. About maybe 30, 35 years ago, and certainly I am dating myself, I was walking through a park in New York City, and I looked up and I said, oh, that's a camera, and it is watching what we do or as we pass by the park. And that was my first conscious encounter with electronic surveillance in a public space. Certainly we are familiar with that in different arenas, but this was my first encounter that I was aware of surveillance in a public space. It has become such a part of our community lives that whether it is cameras protecting your property around your homes, whether it is cameras in other public spaces, whether it is cameras that you carry around on your mobile device, at all times and in all places, we are being watched. And it has happened in a very subtle way. I don't recall any time when there was a large public discussion or a vote. What do you think about surveillance, whether it is appropriate or not?
Well, to even take it further, you know, everybody's using it right now. You know, you have your Ring type doorbells, which captures surveillance. And we do surveil each other on our cell phones, because all you have to do is check out what's on the various social media platforms and see what new video or what new picture has been uploaded. And sometimes we are filming or recording or, you know, taking pictures of ourselves, and other people are caught in our camera's eye. And so that's also surveillance. And I think sometimes when we think about surveillance, as Cecil just put it out there, we think about entities other than ourselves, other than our neighbors, you know, other than our family members. Or our own attempts. We think of it as being total external to our social network. But, you know, one of the things that I brought up was that surveillance is everywhere. And you may think it's cute that you've got a picture of your dog ringing the doorbell on your doorbell camera. But what if there's some kind of criminal or harmful activity in the background that picture captures? So then the question is, what's your responsibility? You know, how do you look at sharing this? Where are we as a community and as a culture with sharing the fact that each one of us has the ability to surveil each other as well as share that information. We talk a lot about the police wearing body cameras and how it has increased accountability, but how has the proliferation of what I call social surveillance? I haven't got a real fancy name for it, but I just call it social surveillance because it's what we do with each other, and sometimes it's part of our social networking. How do you feel about this social surveillance? Are you willing to be an active participant in it? Do you feel it's a slippery slope? What do you feel? How do you feel it should be used? Go ahead, Cecil.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We are certainly familiar with surveillance, and most recently, a little bit more than a year ago, a young woman, I believe she was 17 years old at the time, had the strength and the wisdom to pull out her camera phone and record the murder of Mr. Floyd. Had it not been for that young woman, I don't think many people believe that the universal uprising would have occurred, and certainly Mr. Floyd murderer would not have been convicted. It has become such a part of our lives, and we've slipped into this. And oftentimes it can be used for good, but too many times we have to ask ourselves, what type of society are we living in, and what are our responsibilities towards one another? Are we in this brave new world? It's certainly past 1984, but how do we move forward, or how do we create a new awareness of what our society is and what it means? It's scary, but it is the reality. And for most people in the world now, this has been a part of their daily lives. Those who can remember a time when this was not a part are dying off. And so the question is it possible to revert this? Or how do we establish our private space when everything is so public?
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Phone number is 503-231-8187. And you don't have to address both topics. As a matter of fact, it's easier if you don't. Gives more people more time to talk. Gives you a chance to expand your idea on something. So join us. We're talking about changes in volunteerism, especially as how it has affected the millennial generation, and then this whole idea of surveillance. Where are we with this? We push really hard to get surveillance in some areas. We're anxious when we have surveillance in others, and we ourselves have mixed feelings about whether we want to be on somebody's camera or in somebody's video recording or what have you. And so I'm sure we have some complex and nuanced feelings about surveillance.
Let's go to Arthur. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning to both of you, and it's a wonderful day. I would just like to make a comment on a minor point. According to Edward Snowden, if you're talking on the phone, or if you got your phone on in general, that's all being recorded by computers and the NSA and all that stuff. Here's the point I want to make. Mm-hmm. When my neighbor comes over, like most people, she's always carrying a cell phone in her hand. Mm-hmm. And when she comes over, I ask her to shut it off and put it in her pocket. I don't even allow, in my home, I don't allow people to have their cell phone on and in their hand. I ask her to shut off the phone and put it in her pocket. And if you think I'm being paranoid, that's a fact.
Well, so that's I'd like to comment
on that.
Well, I'm not really concerned about that because I bought in it and I carry my cell phone. What I'm talking about more importantly, I think, is the fact that she may shut off her cell phone in your presence, in your house, in your property. But that doesn't mean that if you have a neighbor nearby who has home surveillance, that even if it's not pointed at your house directly, it still may have your house in its scope of vision. And, you know, you really can't tell them to shut off their doorbell that records what goes on in front of their house if it captures yours. Because that means if you're coming out of your house and you're seeing, you know, from their doorbell going into your car or your garage or whatever, you know, that's on their property. And that's a collateral, shall we say, collateral damage. So that's more or less what we're talking about now, how we feel about that, how we use it. I assume that every single electronic device that I have that has that capacity is recording me. I just assume it. I live in modern world.
supposedly,
no, I see the news.
Supposedly, if you're outside in public, anything is legal to be recorded by anybody.
Right, but I'm talking about.
But I take it a step further. I don't even allow people inside my house that have their cell phone out because I think that's spying on very very private conversations. I'm going to leave you with that because I've got something on the stove.
Oh, no. Go to your stove. We see it right now.
Yeah, we see your pot boiling. You know, I hear what our caller is saying, but, you know, it's so far past that now. Hmm. You know, it's so far past that now. And I guess if anything, one of the reasons why I'm kind of bringing it up to see where we are. I don't want to say how comfortable, but see where we are, if we want to share where we are, because according to the context given by, was it Frank, our caller?
Arthur.
Oh, Arthur, I'm sorry. According to the context given by Arthur, we might be like the frogs in the pot of slowly boiling water. He's trying to hold it back at square one, and we're on square 31, you know.
So I go into Arthur's house, and he collects my phone. Does he collect my watch? Does he collect my eyeglasses?
Well, you know, unless you got some of those fancy eyeglasses that you can see, you know, stuff with, he probably doesn't know.
Yeah.
So my question would be, what if my neighbor has one of those backup cameras on their vehicle and they see him clearly through his, he can be seen clearly through that backup camera on the vehicle, or again, like I said, the surveillance doorbell.
Yes.
And I don't think he heard me. It's like those cameras have some of them have some very good resolution. And they have seen everything from meteors crashing down to assaults by and thefts from porches, you know, across the street from the neighbor with those cameras. People have been arrested for assaulting homeless people because somebody's camera on their house caught the images, or they caught a crime. And so, you know, when you get these devices, they often tell you your information is possibly all uploaded off-site. It's not just yours anymore. You don't have exclusive control of it.
Well, I wonder, Celeste, it's, it seems as if you're raising a concern, and people should be aware or think about it. But I'm wondering if also, because we are living in a society where we promote, we live by video. We upload everything we do to some social platform. And it is such a part of daily lives. I wonder whether it is a concern of generations who this is what life is all about. Of course, my life is being recorded, and I'm going to even upload something I do. I want you to see what food I am eating at this moment. Look, I am on vacation, thousands of miles away from my home, so anyone knows that you can enter into my house because I am not there. I have my cameras in my house, and I'm watching, you know, 1,000 miles what's going on in my house. I'm watching my children. I'm watching my baby sleep. I expect to do this dance, and I want to know how many followers I have on my social platform. It's life.
Well, maybe that's the issue. Maybe that is it. And you know, that's why we're asking. It's like, how do you deal with the fact that it is life? Does it even enter your mind? See, like Arthur, he thinks about it, and he's trying to draw a line. Some of us are okay with that. And then, you know, the next question is, well, if you're okay with that, how do you feel about the fact that that information, even though you post it, is not yours to decide what can be done with it? Are people okay with that? Are they okay with the fact that if a crime is committed in your area and if your doorbell device records that, the authorities can compel you to send that in? You know, are people okay with it? Because there are a lot of folks that said this is the way it should be. I mean, if you ask Mark Zuckerberg or any of the other social media folks, their whole aim is to share all this information. They consider it the digital community. This is old conversation to them, very old. And maybe it dates us by the fact that we're still looking at how widespread it is. Maybe everybody else has accepted it and moved on.
Moved on.
Well, it's a non-issue, you old
fogies.
Why are you still discussing it? And I think it's because there are more and more aspects of it rolling out every day. There was an article.
Well, can you hold on to that?
Okay,
moment,
sure.
So we can get Robbie right now. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning, Robbie.
I think a lot about this the topic. In 2006 and 2005, I was putting a little Band-Aid over my laptop's web camera because of what was to come out because of Edward Snowden. And so it was funny watching how, when I was doing that, I was considered the crazy conspiracy theorist. Mm-hmm. You know, back in 2005, 2006, I was covering up my web cameras, taking my cell phone battery out of my cell phone whenever I was going to critical meetings. And then, you know, as time goes on, I watched the surveillance come everywhere. There's CCTV everywhere. There's ring bells. You can't take your battery out of your cell phone now, so it just always is on. I actually had a very interesting thing. Me and my partner, we hook our Bluetooth up to our car, and her phone was dead. But it's so funny because every time that her phone comes into the car, it kicks me off the Bluetooth. Uh-huh. Her phone was dead yesterday, and she comes into the car, and it still kicked me off. And that's because these things have, even if it's a dead phone. So it's everywhere. I've been watching it, and I've given up on covering up my webcam cameras. I've kind of given up on a certain aspect of that. Just because, you know, there's so many other things. There's the smart TVs, you know, my friend, but I'm kind of going into how it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I feel it's like I've lost a little bit of being able to draw that line. It's everywhere. But I'm also watching, you know, I love what you said earlier. We're past 1984. We're in the brave new world where people want it that way.
Yes.
And I guess I'll make two points quickly, but I had a friend who had an Alexa, and I was talking to him about how it was recording everything, and he said, no, it doesn't record everything. It just waits to hear me say the right words. And I was like, well, how would it know you're saying the right words if it's not listening to you? And
that's
so
right.
But this is how they made it people think. Eventually he ended up saying, he goes, you know, I'm sure they record some Alexas, but not my Alexa. He said
not my Alexa.
Well, you know what's funny, Rob? This is anecdotal. This is by no means scientific. But you can go on the video platforms, and you can watch videos of parrots talking and ordering stuff off of Alexa. Okay.
Hmm.
So if a parrot talking and not necessarily intelligently, you know, ordering these things, but just, you know, in the course of its vocalizing, it says crackers or, you know, peanuts or something. And people have wondered, how did this get on my Alexa shopping list? And then they later find out and make a video and put it on the tube, you know, and we see that this thing is interacting with an animal. That means it's listening. And it's funny when you say, the guy says, oh, it's not listening to mine. I think, well, then yours doesn't work. But, you know, to take this surveillance thing a whole lot further, and, you know, I'm just trying to get people engaged, just, you know, to think about it. If you buy the new generation of Wi-Fi, Internet of Everything modules, your internet service is automatically kicked out into the public. Sidewalk internet is one of the phrases they use for it, and you have to deliberately go in and opt out. And the argument has been that some of these devices appear not to let you opt out. So that's a whole different form of surveillance. It takes it to a whole nother level, because if I have a surveillance of everything, like Alexa or what have you, and I can't shut off my internet, that means that somebody else can join in my community of my personal internet of everything. That means everything, even your thermostat, is being shared by somebody.
That was one of the main concerns they had in the late 2000s or the early 2000s is with there was the pacemakers that Dick Shenney,
yes.
Dick Shenney's heart had some kind of a pacemaker that could be hacked. And they got very concerned because it was Dick Shenney. And so now he's on his ninth heart transplant or something like that. But I'll finish with this one last part. But yeah, we're going into this thing with the surveillance. And I lost the thought. I'm going to bring this up. I know Celeste, you probably might want to read about this, but DARPA, you know, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency.
Yeah.
They were developing what was called Life Log. LIFELOG, LifeLog. DARPA was developing LifeLog, and then they pulled the plug. They just randomly pulled the plug on this entire project they spent millions of dollars on. And what LifeLog was supposed to do, it was supposed to track everything everybody did, where you were going, where, you know, what you ate for breakfast, who you're talking to, if you're flying somewhere, right? You know, and it was going to log your life. Ironically, Wired magazine wrote an article about it, an online article about it, and they talked about how LifeLog got pulled. Like, they just, this crazy DARPA program got pulled, weird, on February 4th, 2004. And the most weirdest thing, the weirdest thing for me, and it's no coincidence really, is that Facebook was founded on February 4th, 2004, the same exact day. So what you have is DARPA pulling their LifeLog, and then you have the founding of Facebook. I don't know. I can't for one minute not think that NQTEL, which is a firm which the Pentagon owns for funding technologically technology that could have factors of homeland security, but LifeLog and Facebook were pulled and started on the same day, and I don't think there's any difference really. I think that we just went from having the government trying to figure out how to implement it to us basically wanting it, and we're going to tell them what we're eating for breakfast.
Well, you know, when you said that, like any good, you know, tech nerd, I went and did a quick search, and I have my favorite, you know, don't track me websites where I do that. And so I pull up, you know, DARPA LifeLog, and pops this article, and I'm just going to pick this one out. It was written in September 2020. Relevant Black Technology Globalist Corporations is the category. And it says Facebook is likely just the DARPA LifeLog project renamed. And, you know, here's the thing. I'm trying to find the author of this. Oh, that's interesting. I don't see an author's name. Maybe it's down at the bottom here. The site is called Decrypted Matrix. Okay, so it sounds like just the kind of thing, you know, where you would discuss this, whether it's, you know, true or semi-true or whatever, you know, and this is no slam on you. I'm just laughing because this is us as human beings. Over in the right margin is a T-shirt offering, and the T-shirt has a picture of this guy dressed up as Bigfoot. It says, Bigfoot doesn't believe in you either. But anyway, my point is that it has the same thing, you know, and we don't know. We don't know. Truth is often stranger than any fiction we can manufacture. So I'm appreciating what you're saying, you know, is that surveillance is everywhere, and if you just simply go online, I was reading this article in the Guardian called I Spy, or Smart Doorbells Creating a Global Surveillance Network. And so we'll just leave it at that, and thank you so much for your call.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon. This is More Talk Radio. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and I believe John is on the line.
Well, I'm going to be talking on about the same line. I'm using this whole thing about weaponization of the information age.
Yes.
And I'm using it. Going to use an example, exaggerated one, the January 6th terrorist attack on the Capitol. With all this trillions of dollars of information, satellites, you know, that can just, you know, they can just beam it right down and show you, you know, what do you want to, you know, like doing any kind of thing in your house if they want to. And it's already been proved, documented, that this surveillance, you know, industry that we have was used on the assault of the Capitol. And it was purposely done. And they have all these little, what do you call, gadgets now or whatever. They can, you know, go sick on somebody like a pit bull on you if they want to. And, you know, and it just goes on. I know that I was, you know, listening to documentaries about Nazi Germany, where they were putting undesirable people's names in shoeboxes, and it took them about 10 years to get everything together. And I'm sure now they could do it like in 20 minutes. They can categorize people and who they want and who they don't want, and, you know, march on, you know. So I'm just saying that this is more than just diabolical. I think we're in some sick science fiction movie right now. They can do anything they want, just like The Matrix. And that's all I have to contribute.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call.
And today is the 19th of July, 2020. You're listening to More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. Among the conversations we are having today is the results of our surveillance society and how we live or have accepted it, whether or not it is a fait accompli, and is there any possibility or resistance, or as John just told us, we are in the matrix right now. We also suggested a conversation about the changing role of volunteerism in our society. At one point, people believed or acted in terms of community work and community ways in which you can strengthen your community. And volunteerism, especially as it developed in the 20th century, often meant participating in a social organization, contributing funds and time for a long period of time. So you might have been able to join a particular social organization, claim membership, join and become an active member in that organization. It seems as if now, because our society has changed so much, that people have only a short time to do anything beyond trying to survive. So to try to commit for a long term, it's much more difficult. People might be willing to participate in a project that is time limited, so that it might be easier to get someone to commit to participate in a community effort to create a new park. It may not be possible to get someone to say, I will put my name down as a member of this organization and commit myself to monthly meetings from now until forever. That doesn't seem to be working right now. And different organizations are changing their views of what it means to become a member and what it means to be a volunteer. And does it, the fact that people are unable to volunteer or participate in the ways you might have people did in the post-World War II generation, does that mean that people are less concerned about their communities in ways they can create better communities, or do organizations have to change to the reality that life is different? Volunteer organizations such as KBOO runs for decades membership drives, and for decades have had operated with the belief that people will not only dedicate money but time to organizations, and often a long-term commitment. KBOO and other organizations have to shift to meet the reality in terms of what volunteerism mean in our society today. So what do we do? What is it like? And whether or not we can continue the old model or whether we have to make shifts. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we solicit your phone calls, and we will only keep you for a short time. Because
we won't record you for posterity.
Oh, but someone else might. But.
And where are the women and where are the young folks? You know, we want to hear from our younger listeners. Of course, if I believe what I just said earlier about millennials, probably a lot of them are either at work or in class or in school, you know, and maybe listening on their phone because they're multitasking, who knows. But do know that young voices are welcome here. So, you know, to get back to that, one of the things that I find really fascinating is how maybe we don't look at the other ways young people maybe engage with each other and how they volunteer. And I know in 2019 we have studies that came out in various publications and out of various think tanks that said that this is a crisis, you know, and that there's being no response from younger people, and talking more about reasons why people don't volunteer. But I want to kind of do a weird axial pivotal shift, if I could. Mm-hmm. I know that's a mouthful on a Monday, and I'm surprised I got it out. Mm-hmm. But I feel like young people do volunteer, but the form of it has changed. And I'm going to say something that's going to look and sound a little strange maybe to some people, but when you look at something like a GoFundMe page,
yes,
that's a call out from our younger cohort that says, will you volunteer to help me do this thing? But it's calling for financial volunteering. And so I wonder if sometimes when we say volunteerism has declined, that we haven't recognized that perhaps the shape of it, the form of it, the energy of it has shifted or transmuted or changed in some kind of way. It's different to our perception, but that network of social support is still there. Does that make sense?
It could. But let's see what Joe has to say. Joe, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, great conversation this morning. I wanted to kind of respond to the two different subjects. The first one is just kind of like a funny cultural reference for the conversation around ubiquity of surveillance in places we may have never thought of surveillance. It's this fake infomercial that aired on the Cartoon Network, I think, originally, but you can find it on YouTube if just by searching for Smart Pipe. And the whole idea of it is trying to sell the viewer on this pipe attachment to their toilet that analyzes and monitors the contents of whatever they flush. And it's just so over the top in the way that it's like trying to sell you on this completely porous reality where the contents of your fecal matter or whatever else you might put in the toilet are under like some kind of intense scrutiny, but that scrutiny is sold back to you in the form of better health, being able to monitor the activities of certain family members and things like that. And I feel like there is quite a bit of consciousness in the culture around the absurdity of the ubiquity of these technologies. And it's just I recommend looking into it if you want to laugh and maybe a reference point for people you talk to about this who aren't so sure. The other thing is with volunteering, I feel like we can't emphasize enough the role that material conditions play in how people act. And there is more economic insecurity. There is more need for different kinds of unpaid labor in the networks that actually distribute that labor. And it just doesn't get talked about for the same reason. It just generally doesn't get talked about. It's not valued. It's not marked as real in the way that, like, the economy and whatever happens in that is. But if there was a great relief to the basically, you know, superfluous demands on people's time that the economy makes because of the way it controls society, that there would be very different behaviors. Or maybe not, I shouldn't say different, but there would be a difference in the distribution of behaviors where people are more interested in connecting, in doing things, in building things. People want to be part of things bigger than themselves.
Yes.
And these days, people have these social networks to plug into as kind of like an outlet for that because of the way that we're only able to fit in time for things outside of the job in these kind of like here and there ways. And it kind of creates this plug for change, for like recoalescing those kind of community organizations. And I don't know the path to like clearing that up, but I feel like it's the point of leverage in society for making these changes that we have to think around.
Thank you.
It's the material question. Is the demands on people's times and not kind of like looking at their responses to the situation as like an inherent nature that we have to contend with. It's like we won't have to deal with people being kind of selfish or self-absorbed or locked into these personalized bubbles if we had more time to actually find to connect with each other again.
Wow.
I agree, you know. Now, just for conversation's sake, what's your approximate age or your age if you want to share it?
I'm 35.
Okay. And so what you did is help me recognize, you know, even more so that whole thing of our younger generation, our millennial generation, just don't have the time to volunteer because society has made it impossible for them, almost.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that people can struggle against that and can try and find time. And there's a way in which we have to encourage people in every situation to find times to support their community, to support even just people in their workplace. And at the same time, looking at like the big trends, that's why you don't see that kind of participation, is people are working, you know, more than they did when the boomers and those aspirational times seem to be filled with all kinds of voluntaristic organizing and activity and support. But that's like, we can't but keep coming back to that material question.
Well, thank you for your call and in your advice from your youthful perspective. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really look up that video, Smart Pipe. Don't forget that funny video.
I was looking at it while you were talking, and it had me laughing. So, yes, indeed. Thank you, Bye-bye. Jeff. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Gorge, 104.3 in the Willamette River Valley, on the web, kboo.fm, and let's go to Allison. Thanks for holding.
Thank you, Celeste. I'm happy to talk to you this morning. I want to give you an example, a case study perhaps, of a volunteerism that young people are doing today. I could say it's more episodic volunteerism, but I want to point you to BTS's army. BTS is a K-pop group that's largest, has the largest fan base in the world, over 7 million fans.
Yes.
And that army called it an acronym for something else. But they do all kinds, hundreds and hundreds of volunteer activities every day. These are the young people organizing, but I am 68 years old, and I consider myself an army. the fact
right.
that this group does all kind of the world, everything from ecological things to providing mental health services to anyone that might want them, to lawyers, to people of all ages participate in this activity. I would suggest that people go to BTS on the Google BTS Army and see the kinds of volunteerism that's happening. In addition to giving tremendous amounts of money, for instance, BTS, this K-pop group came out and supported Black Lives Matter by donating $1 million. Within 24 hours, that's that money and exceeded it. So please check out BTS and see what young people and people of all ages who believe in the motto of that group, which is music for healing, what they're doing. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you so much, Allison, and for lifting up BTS Army. It's a phenomenon worldwide, and thank you for lifting it up. Morris? Oh, good morning, Boris. Oops.
Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to reference something that Cecil said earlier on, and it kind of speaks to the analogy of the frog in the pot. I think it's interesting to step back and realize that if you are the frog, which I would say is all of us that live under this kind of social engineering, we are the frog, and you can't understand the predicament of the frog unless you're outside the pot, because the frog in the pot just realizes that the water is warm and it feels comfortable, and at that moment in time. And I would also make an analogy that comfort that we experience today, the word that describes it best is convenience. We like the convenience. Mm. And so as the water gets warmer, we may notice that it's a little uncomfortable, but wow, we've still got that convenience. And so people will just, of course, go along with these slightly uncomfortable things because it's still convenient. And now, you know, one thing that you didn't mention early on was Google Earth. And you talk about something that should be upsetting to a lot of people but isn't, because it's convenient.
Yes.
Now, I mean, there's pictures of your home.
Yes.
Where your cars are parked. You know, it's to me, it's like insane, and yet it's accepted because it allows for convenience.
So we only have a couple of minutes left, and I would like for you to say, can you identify the frog outside of the pot, or, you know, who recognized that this so-called convenience is not convenient, and how does one live outside of the pot?
Well, I think, I didn't mean to say that it was impossible to be outside the pot. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But what it requires is a different worldview, a different capability to be able to analyze what's really going on around you.
Yes.
And that would allow you to be outside the pot. Mm-hmm. I guess I did kind of imply that it was impossible because we are the frog in the pot, but that isn't really... I didn't really mean to, restrict the conversation to that.
No.
Because if you can allow yourself to, you know, step beyond that, it's almost like a different reality.
Yes.
Well, here's one of the challenges, and, you know, I wanted us to think of this. We can step out of that reality. We can step out of the pot, if you will. We can try to step outside of the dynamic of surveillance. But then that limits our ability to engage with the rest of the world. It's not always convenient. Sometimes it's mandated, and sometimes it's a necessity. You know, these intrusions, whether it be pictures of you on somebody else's surveillance equipment, or you sharing a picture of your vaccination card. You know, all of these are various intrusions, but some of them become necessary, and it's how we deal with that. I think that we're looking to kind of discuss so we can shore up whatever mental and emotional resilience we need. But I want to thank you for your call. We are out of time. My co-host has given me the high sign to shut up. So I thank you, everybody, for engaging. Thank you, Sonia, our board op and engineer. Thank you for all of those people. Thank you to all of those people who support your community connection, KBOO Portland. And Cecil and I will hear you next week on More Talk Radio.
Concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.